Hello and welcome.
That's just drunken sailor.
Exactly. Welcome to the SoToxipod, everybody.
After a long time, tired and broken, we sit here and record.
We are narrowing on in on Christmas, and I think it's been about 3 weeks since we've last made ourselves heard.
Possibly something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I got hit with the flu and it just bowled me over. It seems like at least in Germany and around this area, it's been happening a lot to a lot of people, like really strong
Yeah.
reactions. So we were kind of out of order for that reason. And I think Toby has been pretty busy as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I've also been pretty sick before you. After we went to that concert, I really had a really bad cold for a while. It got so bad that I had to take a sick day, which is something that hasn't really happened to me like ever. And it was just really, really bad.
For
And my
me,
boss has been sick. Anyone with kids has been really sick and has been infecting everyone else.
yeah, it's been going through everyone. And what's really interesting is since I got COVID, I have been way more prone to catch something from someone else. Like at least the frequency of catching things, it seems like my girlfriend, she's frequently sick, and I used to never catch anything from her. And now it seems like the frequency of me catching it has increased. So I'm very curious about that. Or there's just some crazy shit in the air right now. Like, who knows?
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. I wonder if there's something there. I mean, we could do some lay people theories now, but it's interesting. I'd be interested in knowing if that's a systematic thing.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's a self-observation, so it's obviously biased, and I don't really. Not really sure about that, but yeah. On top of that, Toby, where I think you may have passed on your crap to me, is I moved as well prior to falling ill, and Toby really tried to help, but almost threw up in the
It
process.
was
So
such a mistake. I
we
was so
sent him home.
confident. I was so confident that I could help, and I was just so wrong. It was honestly, I mean, granted, you're on the fifth floor, on the fourth floor, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I walked up there twice and I was like, holy shit, I need to throw up. And from there on out, I was just your Jana, your girlfriend, just gave me like a lamp to build, and it took me like an hour to do that, which granted was because we didn't have any screwdrivers, because they were in the van with you. But I just remember sitting there like trying to screw this fucking lamp together with a pair of scissors, I think is what I used. And I was just, yeah, I was just fucked.
Your help was greatly appreciated. Your effort, A for effort. But yeah, after that, and especially being, sweaty, running up and down the stairs, and then going into the cold rain to like unload the truck and everything, it really wasn't good for the health, I guess, and that flattened me. But there was a lot of other things going on that were nice distractions, I guess.
Yeah, it's been
One.
a long few weeks.
Yeah, a lot of stuff has happened. The World Cup has been happening and happened until Sunday.
Yeah, I can proudly admit I didn't watch a single game.
I didn't watch many games. I think, let me count actually. I watched one USA game. I watched two Germany games. I watched a quarter final. What's the round of 16? Yeah. A couple of those, I think, a couple quarterfinals and the final and the place for third, I think, the game for third. And the final was the best final I've ever seen, I really have to say. Like
I heard it was really good, yeah.
it was, I mean, the first 80 minutes. So Argentina played their system and tactics worked, and France's didn't. It didn't match up. And essentially, that meant Argentina was up 2-0 at like after like half an hour, which was so it was like, okay, let's see if France can respond, but this looks pretty clear cut. Then halftime came and they made changes before half, and all of a sudden France like, well, the game was really like until in the 80th minute, 10 minutes before the end, France all of a sudden decides to like wake up. And the substitutes did work that the guy brought on. And they got a penalty. And then it was 2-1. And Mbappe scored that. 1 minute later, he scores another goal. So it's 2-2.
Dang.
Then they go to extra time. And in extra time, Argentina gets a penalty. It's 3-2. And then France gets a penalty. And Mbappe scores that, so it's 3-3, and he has a hat-trick in a World Cup final at the age of 23.
Yeah.
Messi has scored 2 of the goals for Argentina, so it's like epicness. And it, like the last second, the last chance is a French player, and he's in front of goal, and the goalie just makes an insane save to save the shot. And it goes to penalties, and Argentina wins it in penalties. And it's amazing game, just like the after the 80th minute, it was just insane because there's just crazy stuff happening, a lot of action, and very, very cool.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't watch much of it. I was out in Saarbrücken at that time actually, and I just remember hearing like a bunch of car horns go off at someone. I was like, oh wait a minute, it's the World Cup finale. I wonder how it's going. And I went, oh, probably France just scored because it's so close to the border. And I was really surprised to find out that Argentina had won.
Yeah, yeah. So only Germany can beat Argentina in finals. Because that's who we beat to win the World Cup in 2014. Yeah. Anyway, Buenos Aires was full of... There was more people in Buenos Aires than there were in the population of Croatia, just as a comparison to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And it was insane. I think I read like 4 million people were just like going around the streets, and they blocked off every... It was crazy. So quite amazing pictures. And I guess there's already rumors that Messi is now going to be put onto some like bill, some financial currency bill.
Oh, really?
Like his picture, because he's such a hero. Yeah, so it's cool to see, to be honest. And it just, it feels right. And like from a soccer point of view, there was a lot of good games at the World Cup. So that was fun to watch, but it sucks that the sport, regardless of the politics, is like so entrenched in it and so surrounded in it. Because it takes the purity of just the game away, regardless of what it was. There was a few things that came up. We don't have to highlight, like talk about them in detail or even mention them, but it kind of always added to the whole thing when there was a lot of really, really cool things happening.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, FIFA and now the FIA as well. They always scream for neutrality and let them do what they want in order, you know, to follow the money to some degree. And I think that's what takes away from the game, you know. Yeah, I mean, I remember talking about the World Cup in Qatar before it actually had started. And I remember saying, I hope there isn't like a big, how do you say? I hope there isn't anything to really test these rules and the readiness of Qatar to escalate things. And luckily that didn't happen to some degree. I did read that it was the first World Cup in many, many years, or maybe ever, where no English fans were arrested. So the alcohol ban worked.
Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted to interject because there was an example of, I think if I would have mentioned this hypothetical scenario to you when you made that statement, you would have said that that definitely qualifies under that statement. There, when Argentina won, there was a woman in the stands, an Argentinian fan, and she took off her top and was like waving it. And obviously it exposed her like breasts on national TV and it was everywhere, but there was like no problem with any authorities whatsoever at any point of process, because like this woman and other women like continued to flash outside of the stadium and like going forward. So like, I read a couple reports on this, assuming their accuracy, of course. So that was, there was at least a couple things where the worst case scenario definitely would have been different. And it was, I I think, a successful World Cup, I guess.
I mean, the football was good, apparently. I think the political message behind it was still pretty shit about, bribery very clearly. And, false promises and so on and so forth. And that will not go away. And I'm sure we will not be allowed to forget for a long time with as more and more reports come out. But yeah. We will see. I think it went better than I feared. It went better than I feared. Let's put it that way.
That is my feeling too. That's a very good way to put it. In other news.
I guess we can talk about Formula One. A lot has happened there.
I was just thinking, do you have another topic of small talk to talk about? Another talking point before we get to that one? Sorry,
no, I mean,
you misread the segue.
I mean, that's fine. You segued my segue back into the original segue.
Segue.
What else is new? I don't know. I've been working too much. I haven't really done much. Shout out to Heidelberg. Heidelberg's fun. Beautiful walks, big Christmas market, fun public transport system. It was great to have you or to be there.
This is funny. I thought you still had a topic. I didn't want to preemptively go to Formula One because I still do have one, but I didn't want to like continuously chain up my own. So let me
do the thing that you were doing, which is in other news.
In other news. I went to a Bryan Adams concert, which didn't help my sickness period for sure. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty cool because I assume everybody knows Bryan Adams. But what was insane about this concert, I just want to lay it out. It was my birthday gift to my mom because my dad had always really liked Bryan Adams. So we had tickets and they were seated. And most concerts that I've been to, and we've been to plenty of them together, are usually about an hour and a half. Hour 45 minutes if you're lucky, and in the like at festivals there's like headliners that'll play 2 hours and 15 minutes sometimes, which is like a long set, so that's kind of the length that we're used to. And with Bryan Adams, I was like, okay, he's pretty old, he's like almost 60, he's probably just going to do a chill show and he's going through. And but this guy he has a band out there and he's playing the songs and da 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 da. And it's going on and on and on and on and on. And they've done, I think they did like 19 songs and then they walked off set. And then everybody goes, encore, encore. And they come back out and they do 5 more songs. And then they walk off again. And Bryan Adams comes on out again and just picks up his acoustic and is like, guys, I feel like I want to stay a little longer today. And he just all of a sudden asks random fans, he's like, what song do you want me to play? And like, what song do you want me to play? And it's like such a chill move. And then he's like, okay, this is my like request. This is the one I want to play. And then he plays another song for him. And he played another like 7 song acoustic set just on top of after doing that show. So the show ended up being like 2 hours, 45 minutes. And it was just a crazy experience because I was not expecting a show that long, and it was insane. Props to Bryan Adams, that was really impressive. And his voice was like it was amazing. Still very good.
Awesome. The last concert I went to were with you, which was Billy Talon, which was really fun, and Pet Needs, which was also really fun. Bryan Adams. I used to really like Bryan Adams when I was younger. I mean, I still like him, but I don't listen to him as much anymore. He's still on a few playlists of mine.
What I realized is he's written so many more hits than most people realize that are like all on his thing. Like of that 28 song set, you would probably know 10 songs. I wouldn't be surprised. Which like you don't know 10 songs of many artists. So like, it's insane. Like Christmas songs and just like classic songs and all kinds of other like ballads in between, where it's like, man, amazing. So really talented dude. Fun fact, he is also a very good photographer.
Oh, really?
And you know how Rammstein released an album earlier this year? And it was called Zeit. It's basically the cover art is essentially them on this tower. It's a building from World War II, I think, and it has like a spiral staircase around it, and they're kind of all standing on it. So it's like a that's kind of the album cover. And that photo was shot by Bryan Adams. He did the artwork for Rammstein's last album, which I just thought was an interesting side fact.
Yeah, that's really fun.
And a tangent off that, Rammstein is now done officially with music. They have released a
They're
song
going.
called
They're not.
Adieu.
Aren't they going on another tour?
Yes, but they are done making music, essentially. So they released a song that essentially said that this was going to be their last song, and they're going to do the tour, and then they're essentially going to stop. I don't know if they'll announce another goodbye tour or something afterwards, but from a music standpoint, this is definitely, you know, hopefully maybe there's another album or greatest hits that has another few songs on it, but
Yeah.
I think that's probably we're going to hear a lot less from them, put it that way.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's the
I
and
mean,
that's
Rammstein has been
yeah.
around forever as well, right?
Not you'd be surprised. You'd think so. And what do you think if you were to name a forever, like name a
25
decade?
years.
Okay. You would have said 25 years is 90s. So you think 90s? Yeah, they're from the 90s. That's not
Yeah.
forever. That's like Green Day
Yeah, what I'm saying
or
is
Blink.
I don't think I've spent a year of my life where I didn't hear about Rammstein.
Well, fair, but that doesn't say anything about
No, it
what
just means
decade you
that.
think music is from, apart from the ones you've been
No, but it
alive
means
in.
that for me, that for as long as I can remember, Rammstein's been there.
Yeah, but that's the same for the Eagles, for the Beatles, right?
Yeah, but they're not relevant anymore.
Yeah, but, okay, fair enough.
I mean, they are, of course, they're still relevant, but they're not actively making music anymore,
Fair
you know?
enough. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, they are a 90s band. I
Yeah.
think early 90s is when they first did some stuff. But yeah, that's all I have from my side for the small talk topics, because we
So
didn't
in
make
other
a
news,
prepared, not a random topic today for
yeah,
anybody wondering at this point.
that's fine. Let's just move on. So, Scott, in other news.
In other news, F1, F1,
Oh no,
F1,
sorry.
F1.
I thought we still had another topic.
You queued this up so well. That's why I totally played along with it to
Yeah.
show how transparent you are.
Yeah, but Formula One.
Without further ado, let's talk about the last 3 weeks. I've actually, considering the season has stopped, there has been quite a bit of stuff going on.
Yeah.
We have one car launch announcement already. One
13th
date,
of March, right?
February.
February, okay.
Yeah. And that is Aston Martin. And then we can talk about that in a sec. Then we also have a few team principal assignments and rearrangements that have happened. And I don't know if it was 3 weeks ago, but of course, Logan Sargeant is now part of Williams as a driver.
Yeah.
That has also been officially done. Those are the first few topics that come to mind, but yeah, maybe to start off with the car launch dates, because that's the most exciting thing heading for next season, where we get to a first sort of glimpse at some of the cars and how they might potentially look in some form. May I remind how the Mercedes looked at drop day, or at the car launch day, and
May I
then
remind how the Aston Martin looked at drop date?
yeah, and then the testing showed up, and then the Mercedes didn't have side pods anymore. They just fell off.
Yeah.
However, it's always exciting because we get back into the spirit of looking towards 2023. So I'm interested why Aston already announced it like so prematurely.
Well, they announced early last year as well. I imagine it's something to A, to capitalize on the hype for their brand, and B, I think Aston Martin is coming into this quite confident. And they want to show strength and they want to show their confidence and they want to maybe intimidate a few of the other teams because they have had a good end to the season and they're signing Alonso. So if they can hit the ground running, I think it'll be good for the team morale and for the momentum of it.
Yeah, yeah. It fits well. It's a good marketing move, as you said. I agree. And it'll be cool because one can immediately compare him to everybody else who follows up. So again, those cars don't really say much because it could just be for show, but exactly. There's always some truth to them. At least the skins or whatever you would call them. The designs of the cars, the liveries.
Skins, you've been playing Rocket League.
I couldn't think of the other word, the liveries. There we go. Yeah, the liveries are always cool, those reveals. So it's always something. And it gets you hyped for the next season. Mm-hmm. But I guess the more pressing topic or the more crazy topic, maybe you can guide us through that a little bit, is all the stuff that's happened on the team principal market, silly season part two, kind of.
Yeah. To be honest, the thing that shocked me the most there is that, fuck me. What's his name? Now that I want to talk about it, the Williams guy, Jos Capito, that he's leaving. That him and the technical director at Williams are leaving.
Yep.
Because I would have thought that his 2 years have been quite successful in the sense that they were by far the best years. And okay, this year was worse in the standings, but it was still, Williams was more competitive than it was in the years before. So I was surprised by that because they have had that like new injection of cash recently. And I was quite surprised to see that already drying up and him not being replaced or him not finding then another role inside the Formula One grid. That was surprising to me. And then, I mean, Seidel to Audi was kind of, could have been predictable. Similarly, Binotto leaving was kind of, even though it might not have been the right choice, was kind of foreseeable. And as soon as that was clear, Vasseur leaving was clear. Yeah, but it's certainly interesting. I mean, these people, you know, with the sport becoming more high profile, the team principals and the high people in the team's hierarchies are becoming more high profile as well.
And I think their notoriety has grown more than any other like role in the F1 circus, as they like to call it. I think they've, like, through media attention, everything has grown. Fans love to pay attention to team principals more and more now. They've really gotten it in the spotlight now, so there is more scrutiny, a lot more.
I just think I really like that these changes are happening, because I think with these new rules it is good to see a bit of staff movement as well as driver movement. I think it'll be, in the end, I think it'll make the sport better. It'll give it another variable for people to focus on, because Formula One is a team sport. And the more we recognize that as fans, and the more we recognize that that means there is more to this team than just the driver and the car on the track and the pit crew, maybe, and maybe, you know, maybe the head guy, the Toto Wolffs and Christian Horners. I think it'll make the sport and the understanding of what is going on there a bit more, yeah, let's say, nuanced and a bit more gray.
Yeah. I agree with your ranking or your statement in terms of that Capito leaving is kind of a surprise. And it must essentially mean that were not quite happy with him because, or he really resigned. I don't know, but there's something interesting going on there, and I'd be curious to see who follows him up. But with McLaren, with Seidel, excuse me, although his long-term future from 2026 onwards, I like agree, was obvious that he was going to go to Audi, I do think it's surprising that he's doing it this early, because the reports were that he told Zach Brown that he wanted to join Audi in 2026 in the summer of this season. And essentially then Zach Brown said, okay, but we don't want to then continue the contract until then. We want to cancel early. So then he moved early. However, I don't, considering who he wanted to pick as the next person in line, Andrea Stella, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who has now been appointed. I think it's interesting that, especially gearing towards 2026, at least for another year or two, he doesn't like continuously get more and more power because he's been developed his whole entire career. So it'd be mm-hmm. really helpful to like have that continuous collaboration. And Seidel is like, he's a successful guy, so he can only teach a lot more. And I would have maybe done that differently from McLaren side. But on the other hand, maybe they think he's ready and he's already learned enough. Who knows? But they probably have to pay Seidel's salary either way.
I mean, I honestly, at this level, I don't think it's about salary.
No.
It's about influence. Yeah, I like the idea of Seidel. I mean, he'll have to get his own guy, but I like the idea of Seidel being the head of Audi because he has that history with the VW group. And I like the idea of Andrea also being in a powerful position at McLaren because he's been developed. He has a lot of history in Formula One. He used to be Michael Schumacher's race engineer for Räikkönen and for Alonso. And I see a lot of people go, yeah, was he really the right choice? I mean, I think he's a really good choice. He wasn't high profile before, maybe to the degree that he is now, but I think it was a really good choice.
He is invaluable in the sense that he has a lot of intangible knowledge about everything going on, which not every person otherwise considered for that position, because there's no definitive requirement list for being a team principal. Some have a prior racing career, others have owned a team, and there's like 1,000 different reasons why it could be. There's really no mold for it. So I think he's done a natural development path and always proven to do a solid job to continue developing. So why not this shot? It's a lot of trust, but usually people pay that tenfold back with that trust. But Yeah.
I think we're in for a really interesting 2023.
Oh yeah.
I think it'll be really good to see the development that cars go into. And 2024 is promising as well.
What I think is interesting to me to sum up the total impact of like how we're gonna see the sport on our screen in races and everything, and like coverage and all that. From press conferences to Drive to Survive to everything, 8 of the 10 teams will have at least each, like they will each have at least changed one of the drivers or the team principal. 8 out of the 10 teams. And the only like trio that like was kept the same is in the Red Bull and the Mercedes team. Every other team has a change, which is crazy to think about. And those are the
represented.
Yeah, Alonso.
Oh, okay. You're including that. Sorry.
Driver and team principal. So the two drivers and the team principal, that trio, 8 out of 10 teams are going to switch one of them.
Yeah.
Made a change. So there's a lot of new faces and like just switching around. That's really going to take some time to get used to, which is kind of exciting too, because it's like learning the sport all over again.
Yeah,
and different numbers and all kinds of things, because there's several rookies on the grid as well, which is going to be really interesting. So 2023 is going to be neat. The other point that I have for just like an interesting outlook, one thing that was so discussed for 2023 was, okay, coming into 2022 with the new regulations, there's going to be differences in cars now, but as we get into the next season and season after that, it's going to be all the same car.
Yeah. But
even going into this season, as far as rumors are leaking, there still are like, it seems like at least like 2 to 3 even different development paths that are still being considered.
Exactly. Because the Ferrari path is staying for Ferrari and for Haas. Presumably the Red Bull path is staying for, Red Bull, McLaren, Williams, Red Bull, McLaren, Williams, Alfa Romeo, essentially every team except for Mercedes, who are also probably staying with their development path of the zero.
And Alpine, I guess.
Alpine is pretty Red Bull-y.
Yeah. They're Red Bull-y. But in essence, it's interesting. Mercedes might make some adjustments and get a bigger side pod than, or like it won't be quite no side pod. It might be a little different. I saw an interesting interview on Peter Windsor's channel about that, but there's not like massive changes to anybody's car coming as far as anybody knows right now, which I think is really interesting. So it seems like these, which is awesome with the regulations, that they can be interpreted several different ways and people are battling with different cars, but like they're abiding by the same rules, which I just find super cool.
Yeah. And it's really cool that they're sticking to it. You know, I think a lot of teams abandoned their plans last year, especially Aston Martin, who had kind of like the fourth unique flavor of car with their huge side pods. And they abandoned that. And that was a shame.
They looked cool. They looked really cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's all. I just wanted to say they look really cool.
No, fair enough. I agree. Yeah, and I like the idea of Ferrari and Mercedes sticking with them so that we have the top three teams as they are now have kind of different design philosophies that they're willing to bet on, essentially.
Exactly. How do you think the rookie battle is going to shape up next year?
I mean, I think Piastri is going to beat Sargeant just by the fact that Piastri is in McLaren and Sargeant is in a Williams.
Okay, sorry. The perceived performance.
Oh, the perceived performance?
Who's going to be rookie of the year? Put it that way.
Oh, Piastri. For sure. Yeah, for sure. Oh, wait. De Vries is also in there, right?
Yeah, it really depends on the car, I think.
DeVries is a rookie, technically.
Never
mind. I forgot about that because the guy's 27 and has been in Formula One for so long, but hasn't been in Formula One. You know what? Yeah, fair enough. Then I'll say DeVries. Then I'll say, I think Piastri is still going to finish ahead of DeVries, but I think DeVries will show the best performance.
I agree. I would take DeVries over. And Sargeant has a good chance if Williams makes a big jump. If the car makes a big jump.
Which I don't think they will.
It'd be cool to see because then they could have several races where he could get into the points. And I see it kind of like a mixed situation though. His like odds this next season.
Yeah, I don't think Williams is making a jump. I think Williams is on the trajectory to maybe at the end of this rules regulation be a strong midfield contender, but they aren't. They got it too wrong, and then they switched from the Mercedes design philosophy. So now they're a Mercedes engine with a Red Bull design philosophy, which there's no one else they can look at as far as performance gain goes. Yeah, it's just a shame.
It's going to be an interesting year. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. You know, I just look forward to Formula One again.
But it's not that. I mean, it's what? It's less than like 90 days?
Probably, yeah. It's in March somewhere, I think.
When does the season start?
I would have to look it up as well. Let me do that quickly. I have the calendar here. Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, 19th of March.
Third of March.
Presumably 2 weeks before then is the Bahrain Grand Prix. Yep.
3rd through 5th of March. So that's really nice and early because last season started on my birthday on the 20th. So now we're starting 2 weeks beforehand. And you know, a week before that is testing. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Is testing going to be publicized this year?
I doubt it. Or no, it was last year.
Wait a minute.
I remember watching it. We watched it.
They just published an article about how much Red Bull Racing spent during Verstappen's 21 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 230 million.
What's the cost cap?
145. So presumably there's a difference here between total expenditure and the things that fall under the cost cap.
Who released it? Was it leaked?
I think it's the I think it's their tax releases.
Oh, okay. The
tax document being published.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Or not hugely different from what was reported.
Oh, Mercedes spent 380 million in 21.
There you go. That number doesn't mean much.
So for Verstappen, that was 1.12 million per point he scored.
Is that a good ratio?
I don't know. And for the team, okay, so for the team, it's 392,000 pounds per point because Perez also got points.
Fair enough. How about as a final closing topic, we briefly address a recent new policy change made by the FIA?
Yeah, no more political messages. Great, you know, because, I mean, they had end racism, they had support women in sport, they had Sebastian Vettel speak out.
Black Lives Matter.
So much, exactly. They supported Black Lives Matter, and yeah, now.
No, none of that anymore.
I mean, they're still going to do it. I'm absolutely certain.
Well, they've also announced the official new process if you want to do a political statement. So it's not like they're all off the table. It's just that now, instead of what they used to have, is everybody can speak for themselves, and then single cases are maybe not allowed, or, you know, addressed in an individual case-by-case basis. And now they're saying all of them are not allowed, and they all have to be allowed by us individually.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a lot more stress about everything, I think, than the other one, where it's pretty easy to kind of measure what's okay and what's not, and then kind of go with it. But now there's an official form where you have to like fill out a form and send it in and really ask permission for doing certain something, which really is censoring.
Yeah, it's going to get worse too. I mean, you know, that's why I brought them up in the same breath earlier. They're going to go the route of FIFA and follow the money, both in the States and in some countries in the Middle East who are using it to sports wash maybe some of their human rights abuses.
Yeah, and I think it also reflects the influence of the monetary side, which is sad, and that ethics are overlooked for monetary gain. And that's just a sad combination of words to say.
And it's especially sad considering how much political exhibition Formula One has developed into the last few years, which I really enjoyed. I liked having people there who stood up for what they believed in.
It added character, it added narratives in the media, it added coverage, it added more to everything. Seeing, for example, through those kind of protests, the helmets have always been used for sending messages. And the amount of attention helmets get have surely been increased by like Vettel's cool B designs, Hamilton's amazing inclusions of things. And a bunch of other drivers do it too. And there's just a lot more awareness going around because of it.
Yeah.
So why take it all away? Does that mean helmets are going to just be white now because you can't express yourself?
No, I mean sponsors. They make money. What is my purpose? You make money.
It's a little sad, because it again, same as with soccer in the World Cup and FIFA, it takes away from the purity of the game and the excitement of the game or the racing.
Yeah, and I mean, the argument on the other side is that, only when you're apolitical can you bring the purity of the game really out. But, I don't think so. I mean, the game is being played by people.
Yeah, but the game is being played or orchestrated by people that are influenced by political people. So they're allowing the politics to literally infest the purity of the game by associating with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the worst comes from, because that's where the big influence is.
Yeah. Let's see how it goes. I'm pretty sure they're going to start. I mean, same with the jewelry thing. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to have to fine Lewis Hamilton every week to actually keep him quiet. We'll see how it goes. But I don't have high hopes.
Same as
maybe also this will go higher, will go better than expected. Who would have known?
Who would have known? We'll see. We'll see.
Right. Oh, I see.
On that bombshell, thank you, Toby. It's been a real pleasure. Merry Christmas, everybody. We will be back next week with a cool interview. We are having our friend Paul Henshaw on, and he's going to talk a bit about his music. And
happy holidays, everyone.
Drunken sailor, what shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor early in the morning? Way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises early in the morning. Shape his belly with a rusty razor, shape his belly with a rusty razor, shape his belly with a rusty razor early in the morning. Way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises early in the morning. Till it's sober, put him in a longboat till it's sober, put him in a longboat till it's sober early in the morning. Way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises early in the morning. Stick him in the scupper with a hussar bite, pardon him, take him to the supper with a hussar bite, pardon him, suck him in the sucker with a hussar bite, pardon him early in the morning. Way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises early in the morning. Captain's daughter, put him in a bed with a captain's daughter, put him in a bed with a captain's daughter early in the morning. Way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises, way hey, now she rises early in the morning. That's what we do with a drunken sailor, that's what we do with a drunken sailor, that's what we do with a drunken sailor early in the morning.